Innovation Minds presents At the Edge, a podcast about using innovation to empower and drive engagement. The nature of work has changed. Companies around the world are struggling to find the right balance in the new work-from-home hybrid paradigm. As much of the workforce begins to go back to the office after more than a year working remotely, how can leaders keep their employees engaged and collaborating successfully? In this podcast, we interview thought leaders from business and hear their stories and viewpoints on how to use innovation to engage the workforce, as well as how to innovate engagement.
People want to be heard, whether you're doing consumer insight work or employee work. People want to be heard and acknowledged and valued. Ultimately, we want to know that someone else cares. Well, humans are, by nature, a species that wants to come together. We are not necessarily taught in the Western world around collaboration. So going back to education systems and things like that, you know, do your own work, don't look on anyone else's. And yet then to really get to solve the tough challenges, we need to work with other people. We need to be together to solve tough challenges.
Susanna Childers is the founder and creator of Possibility for her company, AHA. She has a BA in economics and Spanish from Washington University and an MBA from Northwestern University's Kellogg Graduate School of Management. Susanna began her career at Helene Curtis, now Unilever, and worked for the Procter & Gamble Company, connecting teams and driving learning and innovation. She is currently a global innovation partner of Innovation Minds. Susanna, welcome to At the Edge, and thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
You've been working with Innovation Minds for quite some time.
My work is around facilitating innovation for corporate clients primarily. And frequently, we are asked to come in and do innovation work around a specific topic. But more and more, companies are looking for an end-to-end solution. So innovation doesn't happen kind of in isolation in single pieces. So what Innovation Minds brings is an entire system that allows people to catalog to involve the entire company and move them forward from ideas through implementation.
You've said an interesting thing right off the bat, right? Innovation doesn't happen in individual pieces. Can you say more about that?
You know, frequently as an external facilitator for organizations, we're brought in and we do one piece. We just had an example where we were helping do some ideation work around some new concepts and new products for an organization. But yet that was 3, 4, 5 months ago, and the company is still struggling with getting that out. So more and more, there's opportunity to look at the entire systems and how things happen within an organization beyond, and I mean systems in terms of how people work together, not just the technical systems. Technology can support and enhance how people work together, but ultimately we need people to collaborate and everything from ideas all the way through execution. So innovation starts with understanding the current situation, not just coming up with ideas, and then developing, refining, prototyping, pretotyping, and moving those forward into implementation.
What would you say is the biggest challenge to innovation in today's environment in companies?
I think sometimes in organizations today, people are trying to move so fast that they don't slow down and take time to understand the current situation, figure out what really the job to be done is or the problem that needs to be solved. So problem framing is a key starting point for that. And taking time to understand kind of what's the landscape? What are the competitors doing? What's out there? And really ultimately understanding what people need. So regardless of the industry, I work a lot with consumer products, goods. So what do people out there need? What is it that they're struggling with? What are they looking for? So understanding and keeping those customer insights at the forefront, the customer experience, if you will, and understanding what it is that they are striving for. I think organizations long have, you know, gotten themselves in a box of thinking that they're in the business of X, when in fact what people need is Y. X might deliver on part of that, but there are many other ways that an organization or a product can deliver the experience that people are looking for.
How do you see innovation fitting into the issue of employee experience?
Well, ultimately, it's about human experience. So there's, you know, the whole body of work around human-centered design, and it's just not just for a product or a service. It's how we as humans want to live our lives. Work is a part of our life. And so the same principles that apply for designing a product or a service can apply towards designing a work experience. Understanding what it is that your employees really want is the same thing, really, just targeted, focused in a different direction to what a product or a service wants. So I think that organizations are looking internally and saying, what is it that we're about and how can we, if our employees are a key part of delivering, you know, value to the shareholder or whatever the case may be that their broader mission is, the employee experience needs to be considered as well. And I was just on a call with some Hacking HR colleagues last week talking about the Great Resignation and employee experience. What do people want in their work and in their life? People are reconsidering, particularly now with the great shift that the pandemic has caused worldwide. People are reexamining, what is it that I'm working for? What do I need? I think our period of like increasing consumption may be past a little bit, and we're back to what do I want to experience? How do I want to be in the world, not just acquire more stuff? And so employee experience is a huge part of that. We spend a large portion of our lives working. What is it that we, how do we want that to fit in with our lives?
So how do we want that to fit in with our lives?
I would not cite myself as the researcher, but I've done a lot of reading on it. I think the things that I'm hearing are things like flexibility, things like appreciation and recognition. So it's not just work from home, but they want, say, I mean, we want everything from our basic safety and security kind of needs to flexibility, to engagement, to appreciation. I can't remember the article I was just reading last week on really looking at rewards and recognition as being a key portion. And that doesn't necessarily only mean more money, but it means knowing that the work you're doing has meaning. I think at the heart of it, we want to live lives that have meaning, and knowing that you've helped someone can be meaning in small ways. It doesn't have to be we're all going to win the Nobel Peace Prize. But that we're doing work that is helping someone else and that others appreciate it, that it has a purpose.
Yeah. And I think that's the biggest thing that we've noticed in all of the podcasts. The number one thing is people want to be seen as individuals, not as a piece of a big machine. And somehow we need to now figure out how to make a bunch of individuals get the work done. What are your thoughts around that?
The research, and that goes back a long way to, Deming years and years ago, dating myself a little bit. You look at the system that's in place, you can take one individual out and put another one in, and the performance is going to be the same. So to that end, people had tend to be seen as a cog in that great wheel. And really, I think that what you're looking at is culture. The old adage of culture trumps strategy every time, creating a culture that drives innovation, that people feel valued and innovate, and that can drive innovation within an organization. They have to feel that they're free to bring their whole selves to work. And that's when you're going to get the best out of people. People want to be heard. It's true whether you're doing consumer insight work or employee work. People want to be heard and acknowledged and valued. Ultimately, we want to know that someone else cares. Well, humans are by nature a species that wants to come together. And we are not necessarily taught in the Western world around collaboration. So going back to education systems and things like that, do your own work, don't look on anyone else's. And yet then to really get to solve the tough challenges, we need to work with other people. We need to be together to solve tough challenges. If anyone could do it themselves, we'd have solved an awful lot of the ills that are out there in the world.
Speaking of the ills, COVID came along and sort of stopped everything and got people thinking very differently very quickly. So how do you see the role of COVID-19 in the situation we're in, but also, where is it heading as COVID calms down a bit?
I think it's been a big reset for people in terms of reevaluating what's important. So we certainly will slip back in some ways as a society at large in the world into old habits, but I think that there's been a fundamental change in terms of accelerating the pace of an acceptance of virtual work, of work from home, remote workers, and the technology that had been there ramped up quickly. So technology has enabled us to be more connected. I mean, you and I are an ocean apart and thousands of miles, but we can have a chat like this where we can see each other that 3, 4, 5 years ago, we wouldn't have been having, we wouldn't necessarily have thought of having it. You're working for Innovation Minds, being not based there where the rest, where the technology hub is. Nor am I, we're thousands of miles away from other people, yet we can be connected really closely.
And when we look at the hybrid situation we're in, what do you see as the way to make that successful?
Gosh, I wish I had the magic answer to that. I think it's really about going back to understanding what the desired experiences are. So a desired employee experience, how do you stay connected? I think it's going to take working in different ways because we don't have the some of the drop-in, you know, around the water cooler kind of conversations that might happen in organizations. On the other hand, you can be more deeply connected with people who are much further apart that you wouldn't have. So, you know, there's pros and cons. I think the hybrid models will be here to stay. There was an awful lot early in COVID about people feeling really isolated and work from home. And, you know, I don't know that people, that that's all been solved either. Awareness is a good place to start. So how do we maintain connections with people regardless of where we are physically located?
Let's talk a little bit about the difference between the virtual world and the real world in terms of your experiences. You know, how does the virtual world actually make us better at work?
Some of the things that the virtual world has done is it allows us to work on things. So a client that I'm working with facilitating some innovation process work for them right now, we're able to do the work kind of over time. We don't have to set aside a week and get together and hammer it out. So it allows more iteration, more thinking time. It allows to, you know, technology with breakouts and things like that, allows conversations, small conversations and large conversations. So in a facilitated process, we have a lot of increased capability. I'm a big fan of Mural, the digital whiteboards. And so we use that to use a graphic facilitation approach so people can all see and share and work asynchronously as well as when they're online together. So there's a lot of advantages in terms of spanning time and space where people can be where they need to be and still be working together. I've participated in a lot of global projects over the past couple of years, even in advance of COVID, and the technology is allowing us to bring people together and build relationships with people who are, you know, for me, are in Europe or in Africa or in Asia. So we're spanning the ways to connect in many different ways. The flip side, of course, is the, you know, the need for human connection and face-to-face. I've long been a proponent of face-to-face engagements because there's just some exchange of energy that that happens when people are together. And you know, and that's missing a little bit in terms of really knowing kind of where are people? Are they engaged online here or are they doing something else and just kind of looking blankly into the camera? So, you know, we've still got some of that to sort out in terms of setting expectations. You know, in a room, the energy, you just feel the energy in a different way.
It's interesting when you say face-to-face because people always say face-to-face, but in fact, we are face-to-face. You know, when we're on Zoom or when we're doing this podcast, we're face-to-face. In fact, we're more face-to-face in Zoom than we are in real life because, you know, you can only look at one person at a time in a room, but you can look at like 30 people on Zoom, you know, and kind of very easily see all of them. So it's an interesting, interesting old relic in a way. How would the energy of working in an office contrast with the energy of working in a hybrid situation where people are in different places?
You know, when you're in person or in person or physically present with other people and they're nearby, there's sort of, you just have a sense of kind of the what's going on. You can hear different cues and things like that. When you're working by yourself, say you're not on Zoom or something, you're in isolation. You're in whatever environment that with the cues that are around you. So there's something kind of, I think, different that happens when you know there's other people working kind of simultaneously with you. You know, I haven't done it per se because I work with my husband and he's in the office with me, so I'm not really alone in that way. But I have heard different groups of coworkers who jump online on Microsoft Teams or on Zoom or one of these other things, and they just hang out together and do their work. They're doing their independent work, but they know there's kind of someone else around, and so we're bridging that energy feeling, I think, in different ways. And people are exploring ways to, as I said, be connected, at least knowing someone else is out there. And it's like, hey, I have a question, you know, that you might toss over the office wall. Well, you have to do that. And you have to schedule a meeting or, you know, make a phone call in some different ways. So finding ways to have those casual interactions as opposed to the planned and scripted and another meeting and people spend all day going from one Zoom meeting to the next. How do we find ways to bridge some of those gaps? I'm a huge fan, though, of being able to work in this way. We've done some really interesting projects over the past years. We've interviewed patients and doctors and things like that on Zoom and being able to build connection and rapport very quickly. So you don't, you know, you're not, it's not at all lost when we're not, I won't say face to face, but physically present with people. We're still able to, you know, the work's still getting done. I think that employers, in terms of the employee-employer relationship, are realizing that people can be trusted to do the work. If you give people expectations, they can, and clear goals, outcomes, things like that, people can be trusted to do the work. You don't have to be, you know, micromanaging them all the time.
Do you think in the not too distant future, we'll look back and think it was weird that people, you know, thought that they should go every day to one place to work together? Do you think we'll look back on that and think that that was some kind of ancient relic?
Gosh, I don't know. I mean, I think we're definitely in a time of transition. You know, we've had several conversations with friends and colleagues and within the family. I'm like, what is history going to look back at this time and say, like, kind of where things changed in terms of how our social structures and our work structures are? It may be. We moved during the pandemic, and many people are moving to areas where you can live where you want and still be connected and do the work. So if you've got technology and connection, you don't have to be, you know, living in the middle of the city. I live in Western North Carolina and met some people recently who've moved here. They came, you know, two income household, and both people could work remote. They moved from Manhattan down here because they don't need to be in the, you know, crazy prices, et cetera, of the urban location.
We put out our own poll on LinkedIn. We've got 88% right now saying 2 days or less in the office. Only 12% wanting 3 days or more. Some of the statistics are shocking. 70% of employees in, I think it was Microsoft survey recently, said that they would want to keep hybrid work as an option going forward. Only 30% are willing to go back to work full time. Another survey said that 90% of companies will have to keep a hybrid work setup going after the pandemic ends. 90%.
For people who are working in the information field, I mean, we're talking about lots of different kinds of jobs. Service jobs are struggling having people, needing, who have to be there. I mean, there are some businesses that are food service, mechanics, they have to go where the work needs to be done in the physical world. So there's a huge variety, and I think we'll see people who are working in the information economy and the realm of ideas and technology have more flexibility than people who are working in service. So we'll see how that ends up playing out, because, you know, worldwide, not everyone has the flexibility.
There's also a lot of studies being done and thinking being done around the idea of using innovation as an engagement tool. In other words, being able to use innovation processes to get people engaged. As someone who's very versed in innovation as a practice, what do you think of that sort of circle?
They definitely are reinforcing. And I think it goes back to people doing work that matters. And so if what's valued is, and it's exciting to be part of creating something new. So people are going to be more engaged when they're included, when they're involved in what's coming next. I think we probably have a love-hate relationship with change, right? Innovation is creating change. Well, change is happening anyway. So if I can be a part of it, I'm going to be more engaged, because then I'm driving some of those outcomes as opposed to having to kind of sit back and wait and see what happens to me. And I'm more responsible. I'm a part of whatever my organization is bringing forth. So I think that's a powerful way to drive engagement.
My question would be, if I come to you as a leader of an organization, I say to you, Susanna, I would like to have our organization be more innovative. So what do I do?
Well, we'd start with trying to understand where they are now. What's their current situation? So, where are their strengths, where are their challenges, how are they defining innovation, what is their business about? So starting with kind of that current assessment, how do people see what's working well and what's not? What is the current process for bringing new products or services to market, for engaging employees, whatever place they're wanting to be more innovative in? So it could be, you know, is it policies and procedures, or is it systems and ways of engaging everybody? So maybe everybody starts from a different place. Once you understand kind of where people are, then you can start to ideate against, you know, what do we want to do that would be different? How do we look at best in class practices that can help drive better innovation here? Are we working on communication? Do people just not need to work together? Do we not have the right resources deployed properly? So there's many different ways to tackle the problem once you know what the problem is.
What have you seen in terms of, you know, your experience as being the core problem that usually happens, or the most common problem?
It's probably around collaboration and communication, setting clear expectations and then having, a clear understanding of what it is that we're trying to solve. So when we have, siloed departments, for example, within an organization, they're not necessarily talking to each other. So there could be a marketing idea, but we don't have the technology to support it. We're never going to innovate because we're not going to be able to bring those two pieces together. So I think improving collaboration and communication within organizations can really help to boost the overall innovation.
And how do you improve that collaboration, communication, organization?
Well, we find that people change the way they work by doing work together in a different way. So that's what we do with facilitating work processes is give people different ways to engage with each other by starting and clarifying kind of personal intention as well as then collective intention and goals, giving people means to work together. As graphic facilitators, we like to use a lot of visuals to help people see the big picture and literally map systems and processes so that they're being able to share what's going on. When people start to see that all voices are important and heard and can be involved, people start working in a different way. And we've seen that over, 20, 25 years of being in this facilitation business and facilitating innovation. People are changed. And if you change the individuals, you change the organization and the culture and the expectations. So as the culture changes, people start to work differently together.
And yet as much as culture eats strategy for breakfast and culture is so important and all that, the other perspective on that is culture can't be changed very easily, at least. So how do you deal with that when you go into an organization and people are saying, well, the culture is the culture. You can't really do anything about it.
Well, there's culture, there's organizational culture kind of at a macro level, and then there's kind of departments or groups. I worked with a company a long time ago, and they were a new product development group within a larger organization. And the larger organization was about innovation, but there was some managers who were saying, no, you need to be at your desk. You can't, all the time. So this was this was pre-COVID. And they had to really kind of it was kind of grassroots where they had to say, we really need to look at some of these challenges and we're feeling like we can't, there's too many boundaries and constraints that we're not being really allowed to innovate. So they were able through working together and we worked with them to have some facilitated conversations where the managers could then see that those were some of the challenges that they were facing. They were putting constraints on people that were coming from kind of old mindset and ways of working that work was, more dependent on, the time you put in at your desk versus the outcomes or the ways that people might actually be able to drive innovation in the lab and then through conversations, through random connections, force-fitting new ideas to create something new. So that starts to change culture at that group level, which then can bubble up. The kinds of things that we do are, starting with the individual. So individual reflection and integration, creating ways for people, like I said, we use graphic templates. So I think you're familiar with David Sibbett in The Grove, done a lot of facilitation training and graphic facilitation training with him. So those kinds of tools, it's not about the tool, but it's around what they enable in terms of conversation for people to see where they contribute, to have more productive conversations instead of circular arguments. By mapping things out, everybody can literally see, where people fall. We've done some, this is an old story, but an interesting one where we were using some graphic facilitation with a community group. And in communities, oftentimes they have town halls, people come in, they want to open to the public, let people have an opinion. But, people get up, they get their 2 minutes at the microphone and they give their talk and then they have to sit down and it's all time boxed. And a lot of people would say nothing really changes or it's, that's all political. If you have an open stance where you're truly, truly trying to learn, we worked with a community and created conversations where people were allowed to share their stories. We captured those stories using large graphic frameworks, sticky notes, not super high tech, can do it now on a mural board as well. When people tell their story and then they tell their story again and again, you can really literally just point to that sticky note and say, or that collection of sticky notes and say, did we capture what you are feeling about this? Because usually it's coming from feelings. When people can express their feelings about a topic and know that they've been heard, then they're like, oh, okay, you haven't necessarily fixed it, but at least they know they've been heard. In this particular situation, this one man who had been coming in every town hall complaining about his pet topic was able to move on because he's like, okay, they heard me. I see that they wrote it down and they've heard me. and we're able to move on. So it's a relatively simple but very powerful tool to increase engagement. This person went on to have all kinds of other ideas and was a very engaged member of the community, so they could get a lot more knowledge from him about what might be possible if they could get past being stuck on that one issue.
I think it's a really important thought to leave people with, that we need to have people be heard. If I wanted to give you the opportunity to be heard, Susanna, and share with people what's the thing that you would like them to remember about you when they think of this podcast, what is the one thing you'd like people to remember about Susanna Childers?
Well, what really gets me excited is helping people bring their true, authentic selves to their work and helping people collaborate better together. I focus that work around facilitation and innovation. So understanding experiences and creating experiences for people to bring their best selves to their work and then their lives, ultimately.
If someone's listening to this, how can they be their authentic self? Besides hiring you, of course, to help them.
Well, I think it starts with tuning into yourself and what is it that you want. It goes back to understanding what your vision is, what your values are, what's important to you. So we all start working as individuals, and sometimes we get caught up in doing and we forget to be. So tuning into yourself, and you know, then getting out of your way, looking for what, you know, if you know what it is you're striving for, you may not know how to get there, but you have a lot better chance of achieving that particular outcome. The company that I created, AHA, we started doing that by defining what do we want our lives to be like and what work will support that, instead of what work can we do and who knows what will result from that. So we created some really different ways of working as an organization and with people to support the way we want to work and the life we want to live, more than kind of the what we're doing. So if you know your why, you have a better chance of getting there.
Well, thank you, Susanna Childers. Thank you for spending some time with us and sharing your insights and wisdom.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
This has been At the Edge, a podcast from Innovation Minds. We look forward to hosting you on our next episode, which you can find through the same channel you got here with today. Please join our LinkedIn group where you can discuss every episode. You can find the link in the show notes. We're really glad you were here, and thank you very much from Innovation Minds.